A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, happy Saturday, everybody. Now, one of these Saturdays, I'm convinced, we'll actually be able to rave about the weather.
Sure. Maybe someday.
Ice storm this week?
Yeah, well, we didn't get very much compared to my parents, who got 3 feet of snow and ice and sleet. And whatever.
Your parents, their sad story. I got an inch of snow in April, and that made me mad enough as it was.
They broke a record.
My dog, we let the dog out the door.
And she's like, what the heck?
Yes. She looked out the door, looked back at us like,
you got to be kidding me.
Exactly. Oh, I'm sick of it.
Yeah,
you keep saying that, but it's got to end.
Yeah, well, the good news is today we're actually going to air a segment that we didn't get on last week because of some technical difficulties.
We're experiencing some technical difficulties.
Yeah.
The segment that's supposed to air isn't going to. That happened last week.
Yes, it did.
Completely caught me by surprise.
Yes, it caught me by surprise as well.
We're going to fix it this week.
Well, not only are we going to fix it, but it's the perfect week to do it because it's all about a color that's going to fool you into thinking that spring is really here.
Spring isn't coming.
No.
We're just going to try to fool ourselves into thinking that it's
We'll just
coming.
Skip right to summer eventually.
Right. And we're also going to finally announce the winner of our contest for the free dumpster cleaning. We promised last week, we're delivering now.
Yes. We're also in the studio with Brad Krause from Service Professor. Now, they do everything from electrical and heating and cooling to plumbing, but today we're going to talk about a simple electrical component that can actually save lives. We'll tell you everything you need to know in the next segment.
But right now, let's talk about tools or products that need to be used with caution. Now, Betsy has a segment that she's come up with that's called Betsy's Toolbox.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we get to talk about all kinds of tools that Betsy
the
recommends.
Fun stuff. Yep.
Right. That's Betsy, blah, blah, blah. But now, I've got a section that, or a segment that I'm going to call Use with Caution.
Why? I can't imagine why.
These are things that I have not used with caution, and I've learned a lot of stuff, and I'm going to share that with
I'm
you.
Sure.
And today, I have two particular tools or products that you should use with caution.
Okay.
And the first one is dental picks.
All right.
So, yeah, I like to save money. And I was wandering through Myers not too long ago, and I happened through, I don't know what section I am, by the dental hygiene, apparently.
Right.
And I noticed dental picks, like they use at the dentist, the little scrapers. Yes, you can buy those.
Interesting.
It doesn't matter.
Okay, yeah.
I saw them. I bought them because I figured I'm going to be my own dentist.
This sounds very unwise.
I had a little mirror thing so I could look in my mouth and the scrapers. And I thought, I'm going to do all the scraping of the plaque away because I hate that when they do that.
Okay, yeah.
And so anyway, I get home, march straight to the bathroom, shut the door, turn on every light we've got so I got, you know, a good view.
Yes, yes.
And I go to work thinking I'm going to save some big time money.
Of course.
Anyway, turns out, the bottom line here with the dental picks is just owning a pair or a set doesn't make you a dentist. So as
you
I'm working, I scrape at the plaque 2 times. Scratch, scratch. And I thought, boy, this sounds just like the dentist. And the third one, I embedded the point of that pick so deep in my gum, I thought it was poking through the other side. Oh, the pain. And then instantly. At
and the
moment,
blood?
Yes. As I've got this dental pick stuck in my mouth.
And they don't have one of those. You don't have a suction thing to get all that out.
No, I didn't have a suction thing. I'm drooling like crazy. My little hand is shaking as I'm trying to get that little mirror there so I can see how bad it is. Then I hear on the door. It's my wife. What are you doing in there? What's going on? Now, she doesn't talk like that. But you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So she's, and I'm saying, nothing, nothing. Don't come in. Don't come in. I'm fine. I've got the thing stuck in my mouth. I'm bleeding like crazy. Bottom line, she charges in, sees me with this in my mouth, sees me bleeding all over the place.
And is thinking, what the heck?
She just
You
leaves.
Didn't go to school for this.
Dental picks. Use with caution, folks.
Yeah.
Definitely. Maybe leave those to the professionals.
Who went to school for it.
Exactly. The other thing that I want to talk about, use with caution, silicone caulk.
Okay, so we don't have to go to school for that.
You don't have to go to school because we're going to take you to school right now.
Perfect.
See, a lot of people think that caulk is just caulk, right?
Yeah.
That's not the case. There are different types for different scenarios. Mm-hmm. But for the sake of our conversation, let's simplify it. There's acrylic caulk, siliconized acrylic caulk, and then silicone caulk, 100% silicone caulk.
Right. Now, very briefly, an acrylic caulk or siliconized caulk is the type that you'd want to use in any situation where you'd be painting or getting paint right up to that area. It's caulk that you want to use maybe around woodwork and things like that.
Silicone caulk or 100% silicone caulk is extremely waterproof, water resistant, and it's something you'd use around toilets, tub surrounds, sinks, and so on.
Just about anywhere where you're doing doing some sort of plumbing, things like that.
So silicone caulk sticks tenaciously to almost everything. That's one of the beauties of it. It's extremely, as we said, water resistant, and it is very flexible.
Right.
Those things are all great.
Mm-hmm.
But the water-resilient part or the water-resistant part can be a huge problem if you don't use it correctly, hence the use it with caution warning in this segment.
Yeah. Right? Nothing. Exactly. Nothing sticks to it. That's the problem. It repels water. It repels paint. It even repels itself.
Right. And so you're wondering, why is that a problem? Why do I have to use it with caution? Here's why.
Mm-hmm.
This happens all the time in the store.
Yeah, unfortunately.
A customer comes in, and here's what's gone on. They've used silicone caulk on their woodwork,
mm-hmm.
you know, around their windows, around their trim.
Yep.
And everything looks great.
Yes.
And then they go to paint it,
mm-hmm.
and the paint won't stick to it. It completely repels.
Yep.
You can't get anything to bond to it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think it's such a big deal at that point. It's
no.
frustrating, and
yep.
they're a little angry.
Mm-hmm.
But they know, okay, we'll just get something else, and we'll fix it.
Yep.
They're not angry or frustrated beyond reason because they don't understand silicone caulk.
Uh-huh.
There is no good fix when you've mistakenly used silicone caulk when you should have been using one of the other ones, a paintable caulk. The only fix at this point is to scrape it out
mm-hmm.
and really go over that wall and get every last remnant of it off.
Yeah, there is no paint that goes over it. There is no primer that goes over it. You can't sand it off. The only option is to cut all of it out. And the problem is, if it's on your woodwork or just a primed piece of drywall, it may have actually soaked into those things, and you may actually have to cut out small sections of your woodwork or drywall.
So bottom line, use extreme caution with silicone caulk. You need to understand what it does and where it works well.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkably flexible. It's
yep.
waterproof. It sticks to almost everything. So it's great outdoors and around tubs and toilets, as we mentioned, wherever you're not going to be painting over it.
Right.
But if you are going to be painting over that surface, like around your woodwork and your trim,
mm-hmm.
you need to use a different caulk, an acrylic caulk or a siliconized acrylic, which can be painted.
Right. If you have any questions, just stop out at any Repco Light or Port City Paint store and we'll help you get what you need.
Exactly. Now, when we come back, we're going to be talking about a simple electrical component that you should have in your home. Do you? Find out when we come back. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Now, Betsy, I'm assuming that other people have done this.
Okay.
I'm
going to
make that assumption because I don't want to be the only dumb person. But I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who have, for example,
mm-hmm.
been working with an electrical tool in their bathroom, let's say.
Okay.
And the tool quits working
uh-huh.
for no reason at all.
A tool or
yes.
like a hair dryer?
No, I was actually working on a floor and my saw quit working.
Okay.
And I couldn't make the thing go for anything. Something
uh-huh.
electrical was clearly wrong with the tool.
Mm-hmm.
So first thing, because I'm not stupid, I ran downstairs and I checked the circuit breaker. I hadn't blown a circuit, so I was good.
Okay.
So I came back up and I proceeded to really go to town on this tool. I worked on the cord. I worked on everything.
Oh, of course you did.
And it turns out the tool wasn't broken at all. And what I had done, and I should have caught, is that I had tripped the GFCI circuit that I was plugging into. I noticed the little button was raised, and I pushed it, and my saw still didn't work because now I had fixed it. But when I plugged other things in,
right.
they did work. So this whole GFCI thing
is a little confusing.
Well, it's not so confusing, but I know it is something that not everybody is aware exactly what
yeah.
it does, exactly what it's for.
We've heard of it, but we don't know about it.
So what we've done is we've got Brad Krause, the president and owner of Service Professor in Grand Rapids, in the studio with us to help us.
To help solve your problems.
Well, that's what we're trying to do here. Brad, thanks for being here.
You bet. Happy to help, Dan and Betsy, for sure.
Well, you say that now. You haven't
just
really
wait.
Run into all the things I'm going to need help with.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, first off, Service Professor in Grand Rapids, you guys do a ton of stuff. It's surprising how much you do. So let's just take a minute and let the listeners know exactly what you guys do and what you bring to the table in this conversation.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And yeah, we do kind of cover a good portion of the home. So we certainly do electrical. I'm a master electrician by craft myself. But we also cover the plumbing trades, heating and cooling trades, and duct cleaning starting next month.
So, duct? Or duck?
Duct with a T, like
okay.
duct tape, yeah.
Okay, not... so if I have a bunch of dirty ducks, you're not going to help me at all.
That's correct, yes.
But you will clean out the ducts.
The one that the warm
the
air comes
through.
Yes, you got
yeah.
it.
Makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, let's get into what we wanted to talk about in the first place,
mm-hmm.
outlets, and specifically GFCI outlets. How are they specifically different from other ones? What's the point of them?
Sure. Well, first let's tackle the acronym. Okay, so GFCI, it stands for Ground Fault Circuit Interrupter. So, you know, really everybody relates the GFCIs to the bathrooms or any place where there's water located. And there's certainly some mandations by our National Electrical Code of where electricians have to put these things in order to provide a safe environment for its user, the homeowner.
Right.
So the best way to analyze this is to look at a GFCI as a smart outlet. It's kind of like having an electrician there 24 hours a day to monitor your electrical current, just much cheaper than having a company there for 24 hours a day, right?
We tried that, but we could only afford a couple of days.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right? So you ran a little bit short. So in what
you
it
might
does,
have figured out my problem with the saw, though.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. So let's go to the saw example. Some older GFIs, which is what I would presume is in your home, maybe it's been there for a number of years. Some of the older technology did have more of a nuisance tripping issue, if you will, with some motor loads, which that saw has nothing more than a motor. Okay. They have certainly attempted to correct that. So the only thing it will protect against is anything where water is introduced to the circuit.
And that's the point of it.
That's why
we've got them in bathrooms and kitchens.
Kitchens, yep. And another mandation per the National Electrical Code is any unfinished floor has to have it as well. And really the reason for that is because you have no insulation barrier there.
So how do they work? What does it exactly do? I know it trips or it stops, when it senses water or... How does that work?
Really, what it senses is
that was a really dumb question.
Yeah, I'm trying not getting too technical here, but it recognizes the potential of difference for electricity flowing to the ground, hence ground fault circuit interrupter.
Okay.
So, whenever water is absorbed or surrounds a circuit, obviously water is conductive. Mm-hmm. So the electricity can flow through that and make its way to ground. So it's just constantly monitoring the circuit to make sure the electricity is in the proper spot, if you will. That's the best way to simplify the equation, if you will.
So why wouldn't you put these in every room? Why would you only put them in areas that are potentially wet or damp?
Right, because I spill a lot.
Every
room. And I don't spill in just one room.
Yeah.
I like to spread it around.
Well, Dan, you may need them in more areas than the regular bear.
Just have a rubber room.
There you go.
Careful what you see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Padded walls and all.
Uh-huh. Padded walls
Why
and all.
Don't you put them everywhere, though?
Well, because it's literally to provide an additional safety measure when you're around water. And that's what's for. We all know that water and electricity do not mix. So we, per the National Electrical Code and in our municipalities, they want to protect the average homeowner from that. Because it is, water and electricity, they simply don't mix. And you want to be as safe as possible around those areas. So that's the reason why. You don't have as much potential that water causes when it comes to an electrical circuit when you're not around water, obviously.
Okay.
So
exactly.
They're just unnecessary.
All right. We're in the studio with Brad Krause, president and owner of Service Professor. And we're talking about outlets right now and just learning about GFCI outlets. And I learned that mine was probably an old one. That tripped more readily, like you said, a nuisance trip with the saw that I was running. It caused me to rip the saw apart, trying to fix the saw.
And now the saw is permanently broke.
The saw does no longer work, but the circuit is fine once I push the little button, which brings me to the little buttons. So it will trip, and these little buttons pop. Now, there's a reset button, and there's a test button. And I guess my first question is not so much about the buttons. It's about how fast will that trip? I mean... We talked about it senses water, or it senses that the electricity is not going where it should go. It's an
instantaneously
reaction.
Yep, right now, and obviously for good reason. Everybody's heard of the radio falling in the bathtub example.
Mm-hmm.
If that was not connected to a GFCI, it would take a much more potential to recognize a difference to ground to trip the circuit breaker, which is where you immediately went. It sounds like in your saw example.
I went straight to the basement.
Right. So it's milliamps, if you will. Okay. So a breaker usually has a number on it of 15 or 20. Mm-hmm. So that's 15 or 20 amps. A GFCI outlet works off milliamps, so it senses that potential indifference and shuts it off immediately.
So the buttons pop, reset it. There's a second button. That's a test button.
Yeah, that's my dumb question. What the heck is a test button for?
It's for tests, Betsy. Everybody knows that. But I'm going to let Brad explain exactly what those tests are. Because I want him to feel like it's worth having him here.
Yeah, well,
right.
I appreciate that. Yeah, now I'm gonna answer just the way you kind of did. A test button is exactly that, just to test it. So it will, literally by hitting that test button, it will test its functionality to make sure that, you know, it's not compromised in any way. So, you know, part of our plan memberships that we do for our customers is we do test those because you wouldn't know there's a problem until there's a problem. So regularly testing those is a great idea.
Well, and that's where I was going to say,
so that's something we should be doing because I don't know anyone who actually pushes that test button.
We joked about this question. You know, Betsy said it was a dumb question and she wanted to ask it. But it's not dumb because I knew what it was for, but I never tested it. How often should we be testing these things? Is that a real concern?
It is. I mean, obviously, you want everything in your home to be working the way it does out of a box, and it's just
and
like any other.
Concerned about the TV and the toaster. If those things are good, I'm pretty good. But
then,
this
then
seems pretty scary.
Well,
if it's not working,
it very much could be, and it's like any other piece of equipment. Just like the saw, things get compromised over time, wear and tear, so they lose their ability to function. So it's good just to hit the test button if you're just thinking about it. I mean, if you wanted to set a calendar reminder annually to do so, great idea. If you're just in there utilizing a hairdryer and you just see it like, oh, let me just see if that thing works. So if you do test it and it will not reset, that means it's compromised. But a lot of people may get frustrated by, oh, I hit the test button and I can't get the reset button to push in. That's a good thing. That means you found a problem that you may not have otherwise found if you didn't hit the test button.
Okay.
I used to just play with those buttons randomly because I didn't know what I was doing.
Like, that was before fidget spinners.
Yes.
Betsy, when she was nervous, would just go to the bathroom and push the buttons. Click, pop, click, pop.
Whatever works, right?
One quick question before we're running low on time here. One question that we did run into that we were saving for when we had an electrician here to ask is somebody basically was talking about their bathroom looks like a regular receptacle, but it wouldn't work anymore. And finally, they found that the upstairs bathroom was a GFCI and that had popped and that they were somehow run together in a series. Is that common? Is that unusual to string them together like that?
It is. Now, when we did new construction for new homes and stuff, we thought about that and that frustration that a customer can, and really to eliminate an unnecessary service call, because we get service calls like that all the time, and we just have to find the missing GFI, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is what's called a line and load on the back of that outlet that you'll probably never see because you'll never take it out. But line meaning incoming power, load meaning outgoing power. So anything past that device, you can protect in additional bathrooms outside receptacles if you choose to, and then have a regular receptacle in those areas protected by that one GFI.
But now, you will never know. That's where you're saying the search for the lost GFI.
Right. And why do contractors do that? Because it's an inexpensive way of meeting code. And what I mean by that is, you know, the GFI outlets are more expensive than a regular outlet. That goes without saying. So the least number of those you put in, the better. It meets all the safety requirements, all the legalities, all that to do it that way. But it can potentially create a little bit of frustration for the customer when they can't find the missing GFI.
Now, I have one quick question about that. Could it be possible to do your bathroom and your kitchen and have it all tied together in a series, or would it just be bathrooms tied together?
That's a fantastic question. So kitchens do need to be separate.
Okay.
But what you will see oftentimes, especially in some older homes, is outside receptacles, because those are susceptible to the weather,
right?
Protected off a GFI in the bathroom, if you will. Now, that would be the code.
Mm.
Not the best practice. We certainly have never done that because of the confusion. We want to make things as simplified for the client as possible.
Perfect.
Well, Brad, we're pretty much out of time on that segment, but I've got a bunch more questions. And since you're here, do you mind hanging out?
I'm good.
All right.
Good.
We'll be back after the break with Brad Krause from Service Professor to talk more electrical stuff. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, welcome back. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson.
And we're in the studio with Brad Krause from Service Professor. And we just spent the first segment talking about GFCI outlets. Now, if our listeners are concerned, Brad, and want to make sure that their home is set up correctly and safely What do they need to do?
Look for those buttons. Look for them. But like we talked about in the earlier segment, you might have the hidden GFI. There might be this bathroom might be protected off another. So you may just want to find one, hit it, go around the different bathrooms, plug a hairdryer and see if it turns on. That's your best way. And if it doesn't, it's because that one is operational and it's protecting those.
And it's in a series. My kitchen, I don't think any of them are that way. So that's something I should update.
Well,
is that something I can do myself, or is that something... Oh, you're shaking your head already. Is that something people can do themselves, or should they have an electrician come out?
Well, certainly a licensed electrician is always a good idea, but there's some people that are handier than others. So hard one for me to say that you can or you cannot. Just make sure that you're confident, I think, is the best answer there.
Gotcha.
He was shaking his head no at you.
I know that. Yeah. I know that, Betsy. Everybody reads me very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They misread me sometimes. But most of the time,
Rarely. They're
spot on.
Mm.
Okay, so GFCI outlets. What other cool things are out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly there's some items out there that people don't think of, and certainly that aren't mandated, you know, by the National Electrical Code or minimum.
Right, we covered the have-tos.
Right.
Let's talk about the
fun stuff.
Yeah, very neat. So some things that certainly some of our customers tend to gravitate towards are vacancy sensors. I think that vacancy sensors are a really cool thing, especially for people with young kids. So vacancy is very similar to another word we've all heard of, occupancy. And occupancy sensors in the electrical world, they have a place. And what that means is you walk into a room, it senses that you're moving, and it's kind of like a motion light, right? Your motion sensor, it turns the lights on.
Yep.
The very first time I ever experienced that was in the bathroom at church. And the week before, they didn't have that. And so I walked in and the room was dark. And I reached for the wall, and all of a sudden the light went on, and it scared me. I thought somebody was hiding. I thought, what kind of creep is hiding in church, flipping the light on? That was one of those.
Especially in the bathroom. That's even creepier.
It was creepy.
A little state of confusion on a Sunday, right?
Yeah. That was my first experience with that.
Uh-huh.
So there's that, the vacancy. How does that work?
So vacancy, it's a really neat device. So what it mandates you to do is turn the switch on, just like a normal light switch in that bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing about it is it senses when there is no motion and shuts it back down. So you don't have any false ons, if you will. There's no lights coming on because of a dog or a pet.
Mm-hmm.
You have to physically turn it on. But then when those kids leave the lights on for days at a time, it seems, if they're anything like mine,
certainly
they shut off automatically. So I
need that.
You need a lot of those.
I need that because, well, there's two stories, and I don't know if I can tell. I'm going to tell it because the people live in Washington. My wife's family. I think it was a funeral, so it was a very sad experience. But they came from Washington State to a church, did the funeral thing, and one of the guys was gone for ages. We didn't know where he went. Finally, he reappears, and he tells this great story that he had been in the bathroom in one of the stalls, and apparently whatever time was set on this light, it went off because of no motion. He could not find his way out. He waited until somebody knew. Well, why wouldn't the light have come back on?
Well, it might have been in a poor spot where the stalled walls or the stalled
blocked
doors were blocked.
His motion.
He's probably, you know, flailing his arms and everything in there and to no avail, right?
Yeah. So there's the one downside to those. But the upside would be getting up in the middle of the night and realizing the entire basement is lit up. And now I got to go downstairs and turn it all off.
That's correct.
It would sense that and turn things off.
Yeah, and it's nice to have an item that you can install in your home. Certainly there's an investment, you know, side to that to have us do that, but to have something that saves you money as well. So we actually try putting a close to as hard number as we possibly can of what that savings might look like for our customers to go, hey, you know, this is what you're charged by the utility. This is what we might save by installing and taking these measures. So just besides the frustration of, you know, kids never listening, right?
Right.
So
never.
It works out pretty well.
That's
so
pretty cool.
How much extra, roughly, does one of those cost, those little switches, than a normal switch that you might have?
So the additional cost for a vacancy sensor over a switch is approximately $50 to $60.
Hmm.
It just depends on the scenario. There's different sizes and wattages, which I won't bore you
right.
with. So that all plays into it as well.
Okay.
Do I need multiple ones? Can they be strung together? Can one take care of an entire, like my basement? Or do I need to do one for each light switch in the basement?
Yeah, so you need to do one for each light
switch.
So whatever that light switch controlled, that new vacancy sensor will control.
Okay, so first what I'm going to do is impose some kind of penalty for lights left on. We'll put quarters in the jar. Once we've earned enough money to get one of these, we'll put that in with the kids' money.
Well, that should happen in no time.
That's a great plan.
So what other things are out there?
Well, you know, one thing that's a hot button for a lot of customers now are the USB outlets.
Yeah.
You know, everything is charged and plugged in, and our devices, they never leave our side. So we install a lot of those. So it's half outlet, half USB charger. And the neat thing about those is they provide enough power for the iPad charger. So the more the tablet-type chargers, which do provide a stronger charge than what you'd utilize on your phone. So you can utilize that for either iPad or iPhone if you're an Apple user.
Ooh, that's even better because half my stuff doesn't charge. And you go get one of those cheap little chargers that's not for Apple, and it doesn't charge and it takes forever.
Well, seeing what we have is we had enough chargers for every device originally, and then some of them break.
Yeah, that little thing goes bad.
Right,
the
adapter.
Cord's still good, yeah.
And so what we've got is a bunch of cords and three adapters. And so there's every night is a fight. And now it's just a cold war. People will sneak in, unplug somebody's iPad. I'm going to get one of these installed in a secret place so I can at least just charge my stuff.
Ooh, you are evil.
Yeah.
And that is the nice thing about them. You know, anywhere where you could put an outlet, you could put one of these devices. So if you have a favorite cabinet where you like to put your keys and your phone in the evening time, you could have an outlet put in there, convenient for the plugging in, for the charging over, you know, whatever period of time you need
it's
to charge
for. It's always there, ready to go.
That's right.
I just got to have my cord.
Right.
But to answer your questions, there's tons of stuff. We could go on and on. Generators to, you know, LED different lighting, under cabinet lighting. There's all kinds of things.
Under cabinet lighting. We are going to have you back and talk about that.
And generators and everything else that you have to talk about because
there is so much. And that's just the electrical side of what you do at Service Professor.
Correct.
As you mentioned in the first segment, there's a heating and cooling side and also plumbing.
Correct. Sewer replacement is all under the plumbing umbrella for us as well. So
all kinds of stuff.
Brad is coming back.
Brad Krause from Service Professor. If our listeners do want to get in touch with you about any of the things that you guys offer, how's the best way they can do that?
Well, obviously our website has all of our contact information. Our direct dial right to our office, to our call center is 616-871-1900. ServiceProfessor.com. You can online chat 24 hours a day. We answer our phones 24 hours a day. Our after-hour dispatchers are a little groggy when they wake up at 3 a.m., but we're there for you. We all know things don't fail at an opportune time, so that's why we're structured the way we are.
It's a very cool operation.
It
we
is.
Definitely advise you to check them out. Brad Krause, thanks so much for being with us today.
Appreciate it, Dan and Betsy. Look forward to next time.
Now, what does Thomas Jefferson have to do with interior decorating? We'll give you the answer when we come back. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repco Light Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, Betsy, this last segment is going to be about paint colors and decorating and finding a color that's going to make your home feel like spring inside.
Yes, so
because
it won't actually get here.
Yeah, I don't
ever
know. I'm giving up on spring outside.
Yep, me
let's
too.
Just focus on the inside. And color can help you get there.
Right.
And we're going to talk about a specific color. But to get to that point, we've got this cool little history segue with Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson was a really intriguing person. We all know that he was the author of the Declaration of Independence. He was our third president. He died on the 4th of July. Maybe you know that he spoke six languages. But things people don't know are that he loved books. When the British attacked the Library of Congress in 1814 and burned all the books, he gave his personal library to refill it. Do you know how many books were in there?
I do not know.
6,487.
That's way more than my 55 Hardy Boy books. And it's a way more well-rounded library.
I'm sure it is.
It's good I wasn't the third president of the United States.
It's very good.
Or a president at all.
Yes. The other intriguing thing is he was a foodie, one of the first foodies, we'll say. He was
a foodie.
Yes. It's a current term. It's okay if you don't understand.
Oh, I'm too old to understand.
Anyway, okay. He popularized things like French fries, which I know you love.
I do.
Vanilla ice cream and mac and cheese.
Where would we be without these staples?
No.
He didn't invent them.
No, he didn't.
We're not saying that, but he did popularize
them.
Yeah,
he brought them back from other places. Yep.
Very cool.
Yes. He was also an architect and designer. Mm-hmm. He took over 40 years to complete his home, Monticello.
So apparently he was slow at it.
No. Wait, I found this great quote for him that kind of explains why it took so long. putting up and pulling down is one of my favorite amusements.
And he said that in regards to
his home.
His home.
Yes.
So I bet his wife loved that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Finally, the dining room is. Oh, he's at it again. My mom did that. That's how she operated. Every time we'd come home from school, at least once a week, the back entry was a new color.
Yeah.
And there's mom's little paintbrush.
Uh huh.
You know, the walls got increasingly smaller because of the layers of paint. But Thomas Jefferson was that.
Yeah, he was a visionary.
He would have loved Repcolite.
He would have absolutely
loved. He loved our show.
Yes.
I wonder if he's listening wherever he is.
Sure. So he was a visionary. He was obviously one of our founding fathers, president, trailblazer. But what people don't know is he was also a very cutting edge interior designer.
Which completely catches you off guard.
Yeah,
you know,
it's mind blowing.
The business cards, Thomas Jefferson, third president, visionary, interior designer. I mean, that's awesome.
It is
I'd
awesome.
Love a business
collector
card
of
like
books.
That. Yeah, collector of everything. Anyway, what Betsy's talking about is that home, Monticello, mm-hmm. that we referenced earlier, that took him 40 years to get to the point where he liked it,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yes.
But that home underwent some restoration projects in 2010.
Yeah.
And one of the one that we're most focused on in this segment right mm-hmm. here, was the dining room.
Yeah.
See, in 1936, mm-hmm. other restoration was done.
Yeah.
And the walls were scraped in the effort to determine what was the original color. What color did Thomas Jefferson have on the walls originally here? Mm. So they scraped the paint off very, very carefully, and they got to the point where they determined that the base color was this blue color.
Mm-hmm.
And so the walls were painted in 1936, a color called Wedgwood Blue, and we have had it that way all the way from 36 to 2010.
Yes.
And everybody has loved that color. It's on dining rooms all throughout America.
It's a beautiful color.
Turns out it wasn't the original color.
They were wrong.
In 2010, this project went underway. They did some testing. I think the testing was done in the 90s.
Yeah.
Using computers mm-hmm. and
more. The new technology.
More high-end analysis. Mm-hmm. And they determined that rather than the blue,
mm-hmm.
the original color was a chrome bright yellow.
Yeah. And the woman that we read about who actually went in and did all of this testing and was kind of on the cutting edge of all of this, she said she was terrified to tell people that this was really the color because people so loved that Wedgwood blue. Was everyone going to think? They were going to hate
her. She didn't know
her.
What the reaction was going to be.
Yeah.
But in the interest of historical accuracy, the repaint went ahead mm-hmm. and it opened to the public in 2010. And like we said, the dining room was now this brilliant chrome yellow, a vivid contrast, remarkable contrast to that previous muted blue that we knew as Wedgwood blue.
Yeah, so the result of all of this, if you do a side-by-side comparison and actually look at these two rooms with the furnishings in there but the two different colors, it is amazing the difference. Now, yes, I love Wedgwood blue. It's a beautiful mm-hmm. color, and the room was beautiful, painted that. But when you put that chrome yellow in there, it takes it to a whole new level, and that room is stunning.
Right, and that's the interesting thing. The room went from looking really good.
It was beautiful.
Everybody loved it.
Yep.
To something way beyond
Holy
that.
Holy cow,
And the bottom line that we want to talk about on the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, as we transition now to the actual decorating part of this, the bottom line is that a bold color
mm-hmm.
can take a beautiful room and make it stunning. Now, most people out there have rooms in their home that we would say are beautiful. You know, it's exactly the way we
mm-hmm.
want it.
Yep.
Whatever color is on the wall, we decided that's exactly what we love. And the tendency is to think that we nailed it. You know, that room's done. We can move on.
Right.
But maybe it's time to take a lesson from a founding father and the guy who brought ice cream, or at least popularized ice cream here. Take a lesson from him. Maybe it's time to stretch a little bit.
Yeah, maybe it's time to buck the trend and try this yellow. It will brighten everything up in this slightly dull time that we have with the weather outside. So a lot of people are probably sitting there thinking, well, how on earth do I bring yellow into my decorating? I mean, it's just one of those.
Why?
Well,
you know, just because Thomas Jefferson did it isn't really reason to do it.
In my book, that is a reason to do
it. But there are other reasons.
There are other reasons.
Yellow is a color that makes us happy. I mean,
there's this
whole color psychology thing.
Yep.
And sometimes it feels very, very touchy-feely to me. But there is a component of that that's absolutely true.
Right.
When we're surrounded by yellow, you know, the sun is yellow, the mm-hmm. warmth, it just gives this idea and this feeling, this atmosphere of warmth, of spring, of happiness. All of that comes from yellow.
Well, it can instantly infuse your space with a feeling of life and of energy. It just gives us that uplifting mood that we
need right now on this 104th day of January.
Longest January ever.
Yes. Do you ever remember a January that went this long?
No, I am. I really am sick of it.
Yeah. Holy cow.
Yes.
So the yellow can warm up our moods. It can bump up our spirits a little bit.
Right.
But it can be a little bit tricky to work with. And that's what we want to wrap up with here today. And the trick to working with yellow in your decorating is to use it appropriately and understand what it's doing.
You know, right.
Understanding yellow, what we mean by that is this. You understand what the undertones do. Now, every color is the color that you see on the surface.
Right.
But there are always undertones.
Yeah.
You know, colors beneath it that influence it. And what I mean by that is the yellow could lean towards the reds.
Yeah, the red undertones.
That's a red undertone, and it influences it in a certain way, making it a little more warm, a little more inviting.
Right. That's something, if it's a warmer yellow, that you can use on walls, big pieces of furniture. You can use a lot of that. A yellow with blue undertones makes it a little bit cooler, and you want to use that sparingly. Maybe small accessories and maybe really small pieces of furniture, but you don't necessarily want to paint your walls that because it just makes it cold instead of that warm, inviting feel.
But even in those little amounts, it's going to do remarkable things in a room.
Right.
Bright yellows, probably keep those out of bedrooms and offices.
Yeah.
They tend to disrupt sleep and concentration a little bit, but they're perfect for a dining room.
As Jefferson showed us.
Right. Create energy and conversation.
Right. It's great. And a buttery yellow, a real pale yellow, things like that, they can work as neutrals. They're beautiful as a neutral because you can put so many other colors with it.
Right. If you're nervous, you start with small accents, with vases, picture frames, a bowl full of lemons. It's something that decorators do all the time to put a little yellow in a room without overpowering a space.
Right.
Use throw pillows, a bedspread, things like that. Simple things to bring the color in. If you're a little more bold, you could actually go for an accent wall.
Or you can paint a whole room and be Thomas Jefferson bold, which I would like to try sometime, by the
way. But remember, to be Thomas Jefferson bold doesn't mean that you have to go crazy with this really bright chrome yellow that he chose. Even a soft buttery yellow, a barely there yellow, right? Isn't that what you called it?
Yes,
I
barely
feel weird
there.
Saying that. Would you say that part?
A barely there yellow?
Yes, that yellow. It's still something that will make a huge impact on a room.
Right. So now you might be asking yourself, how do you actually pick the right yellow? It isn't really difficult to get started. Look at magazines, maybe look at clothing, fabrics, things like that. Find the yellows that you're drawn to and start collecting those. Then bring them into the store and we can help you find some color chips that might coordinate with that or at least get you started.
Right. Finally, use other colors to ground your yellows. You know, what we mean by that is gray, for example, is very popular right now. And that looks great with yellow accents.
Yeah.
Natural wood tones can look amazing with buttery yellow walls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like rust reds can be used in your carpets or in rugs, more likely, and furniture to tone down yellow walls.
Yeah, it's great because a lot of people already have those grays and those neutral palettes going. So you can just bring in a little bit of that yellow, paint one wall yellow, and you're right on trend with Thomas Jefferson.
The bottom line is simply this: stretch. Be a little bit creative. I know we live in a conservative area when it comes to color, but we can still stretch a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Try some new things. Check out our show notes page for this episode.
Yeah.
And you'll see links to some Pinterest pages that Betsy put together that demonstrate all kinds of different rooms making all kinds of use of yellow.
There are some very cool things in there. You should go and check it out.
Well, anyway, we're out of time. That's it. All of the past episodes, including this one, will be online at repcolite.com. And while you're there, make sure you sign up for our email newsletter.
And now we want to give away the free garbage bin cleaning from last week. We had a number of really disgusting stories, but our favorite was from Robin Vasquez. Her garbage story wasn't so gross, but relatable.
It was relatable to me.
Yes.
I really liked it because her husband threw away some Legos and, of course, then had to dumpster dive to get them back
and
out.
And you've been there before.
I feel his pain because I routinely clean stuff, throw important things away, and then spend a couple hours crawling through the garbage.
Yes.
So, Robin, you're the winner. We'll put you in contact with Tim Folkerts from Eco 190 Degrees, and he'll arrange your free garbage bin cleaning for you and with you. And we'd like to thank
Eco 190
for making that possible and letting us give something away.
Yeah.
Well, Betsy, what are you doing the rest of the day?
I have no idea.
Well, I don't either.
Dodging the weather.
Dodging the weather. Whatever you guys do, make sure paint's a part of it. We'd love to see you at Repcolite or any Port City paint store. We're open till 3 o'clock this afternoon. Get out there and see us. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And we'll help you make spring in your home, even if the outdoors is never going to cooperate.
No, never.
Thanks for listening.